Welcome to the C3 Church Global Podcast with Phil Pringle. Phil is the founder and senior leader of C3 Church Global, a family of over 500 churches around the world. We're passionate about bringing you fresh, inspiring devotionals to fuel your day and insightful conversations on all things church and leadership. And it all starts right now.
Hey everyone, what a great pleasure it is to be back again with you on the C3 Church Global podcast, talking all things leadership and church. And today we're talking with the enigmatic Steve and Dawn Burgess, regional directors for C3 of the Pacific region. Hi guys.
Good morning.
Hi there, Pastor Phil.
So good to have you on board just after the Pacific conference. How did it all go?
Incredible.
Yeah, we just had a fantastic We Are C3 Pacific gathering. Yes. And our gathering is primarily geared towards pastors and leaders from our local churches. So yeah, we had a great gathering down in Tauranga with people from all over our region.
This is amazing to me because I know a little bit about your guys' background. Well, Steve's anyway. Dawn, you've always been pure and perfect, but Steve, it's a slightly different story. And to be now leading the regional director, I remember meeting you many years ago, like 20 years ago when you're still almost a teenager and you'd just gotten born again, right?
Yeah, so I became a Christian at around about the age of 18 and was on a troubled trajectory, had been expelled from two high schools, had never really had any experience with faith. And I actually met Dawn at high school just days before I was about to be expelled from my second high school. She was actually the first Christian who ever witnessed to me. And moments before I was expelled, she basically invited me to come along to her church. And so I found myself walking past this quiet Presbyterian church maybe a few weeks later in a pretty bad state, sort of staggered in and immediately was impressed by these people who all had something that I didn't have. So I became a Christian not long after, but pretty soon after that I started to think, I don't think I'm actually going to get my friends along to this church. So I started looking for a church that I could bring my friends to, and happened upon C3, and the rest is history.
Yeah, as it goes. You were involved in a youth group run by Dean Rush, weren't you?
Yes, Primal. So the whole idea of Primal was that it was church run by young people for young people. We had a move of God here. We yes. saw Primal youth churches right across the nation and into some other nations as well. And it really gave us an opportunity where perhaps we wouldn't otherwise have had an opportunity to be leaders, mm-hmm. to use our gifts, to develop. I thank God for that. Both Dawn and I together were involved in leading a primal youth church and then eventually leading that primal ministry after Dean and Fiona.
That's amazing. Just winding back a bit, Dawn, you met Steve,
yes,
just days before he got expelled. Were your parents aware of this flowering relationship?
My mother wasn't too happy to begin with. I came home with all kinds of stories about the bad Steve Burgess and his crazy antics at school. And then next thing, he's showed up at our church and coming along regularly asking questions. I think they were very cautious, let's say, very cautious to begin with.
And right to be.
Yeah. And we certainly didn't dive into a relationship straight away, but he proved himself over time, which was pretty amazing. He did have a radical salvation. Yeah, pretty radical turnaround.
You basically brought him to Jesus, right?
Yeah.
Some played some small part in that, yep.
So he's like your disciple.
He is.
And still to this day, still to this day.
Still a lot to learn, but he's getting there. It's a lifetime of work, Pastor Phil.
And every Fantastic. Girl loves a project.
That's the truth. Yeah. Well, the journey then, as Steve just said, Dawn, was that you both led youth, primal youth churches. How was that for you?
Yes. Well, I am what you'd call the reluctant leader. I really had to be pushed into it. I was asked to kind of become a leader early on. No. And then actually at one point someone just said, okay, you are a leader. They stopped asking and they just told me, you are a leader here now. And then again, we just were kind of told you are the leaders of this primal now. So I loved it and I needed the push. I never would have put my hand up otherwise. So I'm so thankful for our leaders who actually just saw that leadership gift in my life and just said, you are doing this now. And I just wanted to obey my leaders, so I say, okay, I'll do it. But
I think there was one point, wasn't there, with you where you basically made a commitment to God that you would never say no to an opportunity presented to you.
Yeah. When I'm asked to do something by my leader, I will say yes, absolutely. So this is where it's landed me, for better or worse.
It's amazing. Every leader has their own story. And for some, it was their own ambition. For others, it was responding to a call from God. And here's a totally new one that people may not have even considered, that other people saw in you, something you maybe didn't see in yourself, and it urged you into that that new role. So I'm interested to know how the relationship went from the girl who brought the boy along to church to boyfriend, girlfriend, and then to marriage. I mean, who, Steve, how did that work?
Well, I think she pursued me every step of the way.
She's only human.
And eventually I just tapped out and just gave in. It was like a lion hunting down a fatigued prey.
Yeah, you were never going to escape me.
Yeah, no. So I think at first I was just incredibly impressed by her spirit. And then eventually after about 6 to 8 months, I realized, you know, that there was more, to it than just, you know,
than being Christians
than that. Yeah. So, it just developed, but we took a long time because we were young.
Yes.
I was 18. She was 17. I was terrified of her mother and still am to this day. And so, we took a long time to take that next step to get to marriage. So I think we dated for around about 6 years.
Yes.
Wow.
We're married. Yeah. You know, then from there. And she would say that it's the best thing that's ever happened to her.
Aside from meeting Jesus, obviously.
Yeah.
Well, close second.
Yeah. So how old were you when you were running a primal youth church?
But we would have been early 20s.
Early 20s.
Or just 20, probably.
Yeah, we would have been in our 20s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now you're leading the Howick C3 Church
where we were youth pastors.
Where you were youth pastors. Fantastic.
Yeah, God brought us back. Full circle.
Because you spent some time in Christchurch. How long were you in Christchurch?
We did. We were in Christchurch for 10 years.
Right.
We initially went down at the request of our senior pastors. We were kind of like associate pastors at the time. And we were asked to go down for a period of 18 months with the view that we would establish some new leaders down there and come back. But we stayed down there for 10 years and loved it. Like it was absolutely fantastic. Great place to raise our kids. We started our family down there. But a couple of years ago, we got the sense that it was time for us to come home. And so we've just come back to Auckland recently.
It's amazing because now, since you've become both that pastor and leading the C3 Pacific region, there's something like 65 churches, right?
Yes, in the Pacific. So our region consists of New Zealand and also some Pacific Islands, Samoa, also Fiji, Papua New Guinea. We're just about to plant a church in Vanuatu, which is exciting. So that's another nation. And so we've got A lot of churches, a lot of different kinds of churches. We've got large multi-site churches. We've got smaller community churches. We've got village churches in Papua New Guinea.
Right.
So we've got all kinds of different churches.
Sensational.
Exciting young leaders. It's a really diverse and exciting region.
I've been so excited to come over there with you to Michael Nassau's church opening in Fiji. And we also got to see, I can't remember how many houses that C3 people had traveled there and built for the locals to escape the flooding, et cetera. But I thought that was made me so proud to be in C3, to see what these people were doing. And that church that Michael was opening, that he runs, is like a community center for the whole village, right?
Yeah, it's amazing what's happened there, because Pastor Michael and Lomi, who are C3 heroes, they kind of happened upon an area where it's pretty cheap to build a house. But the reason why it's so cheap is that the area is so flood prone. So these seasonal floods come through, and every time they do, they basically wash the houses away and they need to rebuild from scratch. Just really poor infrastructure, not great access to electricity. There's all sorts of community issues.
Yeah.
They identified the need for a mission station of sorts. So initially it was a shipping container on some piles, which was basically a center for the community to kind of access everything that they needed. They eventually moved their whole church there. I was speaking to a local there and they said, oh, C3, yeah, that's the church that stayed. And the idea was that all of these other churches had come in from time to time with grandiose ideas of what they were going to do, but they never stuck around.
Right.
Actually, Michael and Lomi moved their church into the community, and from there they have built around about a dozen houses for families there.
Okay.
And have maintained that mission station.
Just amazing.
And have also built a center there, which is just an incredible hub for the community.
Right.
So we're really proud
of
our churches in Fiji.
Fantastic. So you've just come out of a conference there that you had in Tauranga, as you said before. Dawn, what were the highlights for you?
Oh, so many highlights. We had amazing Pastor Mark Kelsey over with all of his wisdom. It was so incredible to have him, and also Pastor Alex and Jess and Lee from C3SYD, which was incredible. So just the enthusiasm, the passion, the wisdom that all of our people caught, they felt so equipped. We're just kind of hearing that word repeatedly, that everyone felt so equipped and so filled, which was really, really encouraging. Just so great to all be together, to say goodbye to COVID and all of that era, and just to actually be looking forward to the future with all of our crew together was so awesome.
It's amazing.
Yeah, and it's always so good to come together and to remind yourselves that you're a part of something bigger than just your own local vision. And your local vision is exciting, but to kind of rub shoulders with people from all around the country and to kind of reacquaint yourself with the greater C3 vision, I think is just
so
a great thing.
It is.
We always come away feeling bigger.
Yeah, gathering together has such power in it. I mean, no grape grows in isolation, right? Always grows in a cluster.
Right.
So new wine comes out of that growth together. And I'm so looking forward to next year in May in Singapore, being there, the global conference, which we haven't had really for 10 years. So for us to all be able to gather together with fresh faces in our midst that we've never met before, old timers like myself, like others who've been around for a long while, and just rejoicing together with all the generations and all the different ethnicities from all the nations. It is, as you say, it's a very color rich moment in everybody's life. I'm listening to you, I'm wondering a couple of things. Number one, you started very young. You took over from Dean and Fiona Rush, which were big shoes to fill. They'd expanded the movement in the area quite significantly. And you have gone on and done, standing on their shoulders, have continued to keep expanding, growing, enlarging that entire area. But one of the things I know about you is that I'm on your New Zealand WhatsApp chat team, and it seems to me more than just about any other group I know, there is just constant communication. How much would you say comms has been a part of effective leadership for you?
I think people always perform better when they know where they stand and what's required of them, what's happening. I rely on effective communication to perform, and so I think it's true of everyone else. I mean, oftentimes people can feel disorientated when they're not sure what's happening. So we just try as best we can. I mean, the role of the regional director, in my mind, primarily, is to promote the global movement to the local church and to promote the local church to the global movement. And so you're a bit of an intermediary. And that's just what we try to do. We try to make sure that communication is happening both ways. And I think people appreciate it.
Yeah. I following the trails of your communications and conversations, though, you are not just presenting big messages. You're saying little messages like to the whole group, see you in the lobby at 8. Has everybody got their ticket for the bus? I mean, it is pretty fine-tuned and detailed, but as you say, constant alive communication leaves nobody confused and everybody with great clarity about what they're to do. But it also takes a level of courage as a leader to start to say those kinds of things. Say, hey, we're expecting to see you at 8 o'clock in the lobby for supper or whatever we're doing. And I think that that as a young guy going into that role, knowing that there was some more mature ministers and leaders around, you exercised a really high level of courage in just taking up the leadership. How would you say a young leader can successfully actually lead older men and women as they come into their position and continue to be respected as you have?
I think if you have the conviction that what you're asking is fair and in keeping with what they have agreed to do, then you've got every reason to be bold. And it's not necessarily a boldness about yourself. It's in a sense like you're operating with a mandate. And so at no stage do I think I'm asking anything that is unreasonable or out of step with what they've already agreed to do. So I don't feel any sense of shyness about calling them to do it.
Right.
I think as well, like, I have been the beneficiary of just some incredible modelling. I mean, you mentioned Pastor Dean and Fiona Rush. There's also yourselves, Pastor Phil and Chris, and others who have really set great examples for us in how to lead effectively.
Yes.
We see that being a part of the global team, and we really just do what we see.
Yeah.
And try to emulate the kind of leadership that we appreciate.
Leading pastors is I think 10 times more challenging than leading your own church. But then it's so much more rewarding when you all actually get on the same page, feeling the agreement. And I see that in the New Zealand and the Pacific region of C3, such a high level of unity and agreement and harmony. And I think it it is because of the high-level communications and the level of thoroughness and detail that's in those. Dawn, I want to just jump into a newish kind of question. Can I ask you what the toughest area of being a leader of a region for you has been? Is it the life work balance, family, Steve's balance, or whatever?
Just Steve.
Just Steve. The greatest challenge, yes, I think it's probably just the lack of time, right? We're all time poor, so divvying up. I wish I had more time to spend on the region, but as you say, I've got we've got our own church, then I've got my family, work, and there's just not quite enough hours in the day. So I think for me, it's been important to process that and to never have, be left with guilt or any of those negative things. That's not what Christ wants for us in our leadership, but to think, okay, where are my priorities? How do I divvy up my time according to that? And to do the very best that I can, and then to be okay with not being able to do everything that I might like to do, to know my own limitations, to see, yeah, that my family needs priority.
Such a good answer.
Being okay with that.
Such a good answer. And can we drill down a little more? What would be the priorities?
Priority?
How would they list? Sure, 1, 2, 3.
Sure. First, my relationship with God, being a Christian myself, having that time. Secondly, being a wife, being my very best for Steve and supporting him. Then my children, my family, then being a pastor, leader, my role in all of those ministry areas comes after that. So
The thing is that if you perform according to that personal hierarchy, none of those areas get neglected. The reality is that if there's trouble at home, you're not the best leader that you can be.
Yeah.
So if you perform according to that those priorities, you'll find you'll do a much better job of ticking every box and performing all of those roles.
Yeah.
I think one of the biggest challenges is exactly as you said, not allowing yourself to feel guilty because you're not fulfilling an obligation simply because you had a higher priority, even though it was a good thing that was being asked of you. Can you come to this women's committee meeting designing the women's conference? Yeah. And you've got a demanding situation at home with your family and you say, you've got to make your choices. How have you managed to do that? Because I know women in ministry, pastors' wives who struggle definitely with that. And then when the husband has a different set of priorities as well, or maybe slightly adjusted for different moments of the week, of the year, how have you actually managed to stay free from guilt and keep a free spirit and stay positive?
Yes, that's a great question. I think the first thing, it has to kind of be ongoing, ongoing self-reflection. How am I doing in this area? When you start to notice those feelings creeping in, is going, okay, I need to get with God. I need to hear from him. And realizing I'm not Jesus. That's something I've said to a lot of good friends as well, when I hear that the bum guilt or the pastor guilt, I say, hey, you're not Jesus. You cannot solve all of these problems and no one needs you to. People just need to keep being pointed back to Jesus. People can solve a lot of things themselves. So I just remind myself, I'm not Jesus. He doesn't need me to be Jesus. He needs me to be me. And I can only do so much. I'm very aware I have limited capacity, limited time. And you just have to be okay with that. And I think just reminding myself that God is sovereign. He can raise up other people to fill gaps. Delegation is a wonderful thing. Being great at delegating, letting other people step in when you can't. And that only grows your leadership and it keeps you sane at the same time.
Right. Because I see you both as a young couple who have taken on fairly high-level responsibilities at an early age, and running your own church, and running that region, and relating to myself and Chris and our global exec team. I mean, you are doing a lot. So how do you manage it, Steve, in terms of prioritizing and then your own internal emotional sense? And I'm sure that you've got some system worked out because you seem to be just coasting all day long.
I think I have the same personal hierarchy as Dawn.
Right.
And Dawn is incredible. You know, I think if Dawn died, I would be dead within 2 days, me and the kids. So Dawn does a lot of work in kind of making it all work. I think for me as well, I remember one of the things that you said to me in the phone call where you basically enlisted me to lead the region. You said you've got to be strong to do this job. And you were talking specifically about physical health. I think maintaining good lifestyle, so that's diet, that's rest, that's exercise, has been something that has become really key for me over the last several years, just to kind of keep it all going. And I really didn't appreciate the kind of impact that had, or the potential limitations that would bring if I didn't get on top of it. Several years ago, I just didn't see that. Now I do. So I think just trying to kind of maintain good habits, good structure in my life. And yeah, also the other thing is just to have a good team around you.
Yes.
And so we have a great team here in our region. I'm a part of a great team in C3. That really makes a big difference.
It's a huge difference. It is the salvation difference, I think, for ministers. And I just see so many who struggle and stumble and are in trouble or having great difficulty simply because they want to do it on their own. They're isolated. And when you've got a team, and not just a team, but friends around you, like all of our team are our friends, and therefore we have our kids have grown up together. We've looked after each other's children. It's not like a professional team of ministers who hire babysitters. I mean, we've had that, but when we look after each other's families. We look after each other's homes. Yes. At times. We've been like fellow disciples together. And I think that's a key cultural element in C3. And for me, the miracle is that respect has not been lost in familiarity, in being close to each other. It's like we can be friends, but then in the right context, the respect has remained intact. And honor and respect is the muscle tone of any movement, of any organization. And if that goes, pretty much the whole fabric falls apart. But once we've managed, and I just think it's like something that God has gifted us with, to be able to walk together through all the most intimate areas of life, and we know a lot about each other, and yet not lose that sense of honor and respect that keeps a chain of command alive.
Yes, for sure. And I think another thing, Pastor Phil, that, I mean, you mentioned it looks like we're coasting. I think we work really hard so that we can be relaxed in key moments. So I think, you know, you've got to have a strong work ethic in ministry. There's no doubt about that. The other thing, too, is that you've got to have a good sense of humor.
Yes.
Because, you know, just having a laugh about the absurdity of life, ministry, situations, like, it just releases that pressure.
If you don't laugh, you'll cry, right?
Yeah.
Or worse. Yeah.
Exactly. So your church is also going pretty well, growing and expanding. What do you put that down to?
Yeah, it is going pretty well. I think, like any pastor, we'd like it to be going better. But we've got a great group of people around us. We're in an exciting part of Auckland, which itself is growing, and we have a very vibrant, diverse church.
Yes, super multicultural, which I think is very appealing. Certainly in the area we live, we are a reflection of the community that we're in. So
we want to look like our neighbourhood.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so we recently have, I guess reluctantly, become a multi-site church just because we tapped out on the capacity of our first building. So we've moved to become three locations, two here in Auckland, and what that has done is it's created some space for us to grow into.
Yes, keep growing.
We just really love our local church. I guess as much as we love our region, we believe in the importance of the local church.
Yes.
And we've got an exciting group of young leaders coming through that hopefully are going to usher us into some exciting days in the future.
Fantastic. Yeah. Just one last question, because it might open up a decent conversation for a lot of people listening to the podcast. You have revived a passion for theology, and as have done a whole swathe of your generation, and there are a lot of questions that many have brought up on Calvinism and various other aspects of theology and doctrine. When I was a young Christian, we were emerging from a lot of fights that seemed like we weren't part of it, but before us there was all sorts of fights amongst Christians about theological positions, and it seemed like everybody was glad to get beyond that. And so we've never really hovered around the finer points of what you believe and what I believe. But I do find that there's a rising keen appetite to actually formulate a clear theology structure in younger people's minds, which I heartily recommend. I think it's an awesome pursuit, and to increase your knowledge of Scripture, to study the greats of Christian history, etc. So just in terms of how can people like myself and other pastors handle this quest for theological clarity in their own churches and in our movement?
Well, I think when I came into the church, I came into a climate fairly ignorant of everything that had gone before. But there was a reluctance to engage in sort of any... There was an anti-academia, and there were certain conversations which were sort of out of bounds, because of the fear that it might, provoke
right.
Conflict. So there were all of these great conversations which could potentially really strengthen people's faith, which people were avoiding because they weren't able to have a conversation well. What I thought is, why don't we just have the conversation well? Why don't we learn to talk about these ideas and not divide over them, unless they are primary matters of primary importance? So, say for example, you mentioned soteriology is a debate in my mind, which at the end of the day, we're going to get to heaven. One camp is going to be right, one camp is going to be wrong. Neither camp is going to care. But the conversation of how God saves is a very enriching conversation to engage in, yes. Providing that you don't have a kind of an arrogance about you. We're both parties, regardless of the position they end up in, come out being more awestruck and appreciative of the God who saves. I mean, what a great outcome. Right. So I think going into it with a certain kind of humility, and oftentimes that hasn't been the case with the kind of pseudo-intellectuals. You know, they read one book, they listen to, you know, one lecture, and now they're on a crusade within their local churches, presuming that they are the teachers of the day. I think if everybody just engages with humility, I don't think the pastor necessarily has to be the smartest person in the church. And I think it's okay to be curious and to engage, to lead with questions, to not be afraid. You know, part of the command to Christians is to love the Lord their God with all of their heart, soul, and mind.
Right.
And I think that's an underappreciated part of the Christian experience, is to fully engage their mind in the pursuit of God. And I think if you don't put your bumpers up, if you don't, you know, treat it as a thing to be feared, then it won't be. It won't turn out that way.
Right. Right.
Yeah. So I don't think it is a thing to be feared. I think it's a thing to be pursued.
Yes.
Well, I think you guys are perfect as new generation leaders, and you're able to feel those kinds of conversations really effectively, and as you say, with humility. And I just want to see so many more young men and women rise up right across our movement. And I'm so super excited because we have had so many express courses, which is like a boot camp for young ministers and existing ministers to get refreshed. But I think in Indonesia recently, there was 150 who went to that express course, which is phenomenal.
Amazing.
And I think in Europe, there was about 70. And there's one coming up in America in September,
yes.
Which will, yeah. And literally hundreds of new people are getting trained up for this ministry, and most of them are somewhere between 18 and 40. And while we've got on the books for this coming year, anything between 45 and 60 new churches are going to be planted.
Amazing. Yes.
In C3. The raising of new leaders is imperative.
And so I'm so glad. Demand, Pastor Phil,
yeah.
for Express has never been higher.
Mm.
Right.
The value of
That's
it,
right.
you know, there are so many people who are looking to be equipped and wanting to be released into the ministry. I think the best days of C3 are ahead of us.
Yeah. Well, to look at these numbers and the age of the people attending all these, it is incredible. Hey, thanks, guys, for being on the podcast this week. And always a delight, always
That's
a joy to catch up with you. Thank you so much for all you do, all the hard work that you are engaged in, and we look forward to a brilliant future with you.
Thanks,
God bless.
Phil.
Thank you.